that start happening to your team that set up the offseason start to fall. Like, this guy gets cut because of salary cap reasons, or this guy gets suspended indefinitely because he's in a drug program. This being a potential pilot program for how to deal with marijuana offenders in the program, you know, mental health issues that Randy Gregory has dealt with throughout his career, and how the league views that, and how the league views medicating those situations, and how the league views players that are trying to actively work towards helping themselves in the plus and minus of doing that while separating the player from his team.
Are they going to help you right now, 2019? Is that player that you draft that's not really a top-tier guy, is he really going to be able to change how your offense functions? Or are you going to have to kind of babysit and bring him along?
All right. You are now rocking with the best. Thank you so much for tuning in for another exciting, exhilarating, and much anticipated episode of Catch This Fade. I am, of course, your host, KD Drummond, and I am here with a very close personal friend of mine, the one, the only, Landon McCool. Say what's up to the people, Landon.
What's up, everybody? I am so, so thrilled to finally make it back onto the Fade. I'm glad to be here joining with you, KD. I'm glad to chop it up with football, life, everything that we're going to talk about.
You already know what it is. This is going to be our special Friday edition of Catch This Fade, which means that we're doing things a little bit differently than we do throughout the rest of the week. The rest of the week, we are solely 100% focused on football. That is our drive. That is our energy. It is everything that we thrive to be. But on Fridays, we still talk a lot about football, but we want to take it a little bit easy. So I couldn't think of a better person to bring on than my man Landon. He can be reached on Twitter at McCoolBCB. That's McCoolBCB. Make sure you are following him right now. Stop what you're doing. Hit pause on the podcast and go follow him on Twitter right now.
Right now.
Obviously, the Cowboys are getting ready to enter into this whole free agency thing. That is the big news on the calendar. We know the offseason. We just finished the combine. Now we move on to the free agency, and then we have free agency, the peak, the top-tier free agency. Then you get to the second tier, and then you kind of get to the stragglers, and you move more and more towards the draft. The Cowboys obviously have a philosophy that they try to plug every hole that they have in free agency, and that lends them to being flexible when it comes to the draft. That's what they say lip service wise, but it's not really always the case. They do make sure that the roster is complete to the point that if they don't get somebody in the draft, they don't have to reach for them. But please believe, if you look over the last several drafts, Dallas definitely still drafted for need. It was one thing, everybody talks about best player available, and that's, you know, the thing that you want to go by, and that's complete total BS. It's best player available at a position of need, and that means that what they do in free agency obviously has a role to play about what they do in the draft. Now, I, for one, want to talk about false narratives, because there's a lot of stuff. The Cowboys have a huge fan base, millions on millions on millions, and everybody has an opinion and everybody has a Twitter account. So you get to hear when you're a Cowboys writer, blogger, podcaster, whatever you want to call it, you get to hear a myriad of different stances, and there's a lot of people in the echo chambers on each one of those stances. You might have a million people that believe something that's completely outlandish, but because there's so many, it seems like that might be the majority, just because that's the cut of the swath that you come across. For me, the top thing that I'm just perplexed in hearing is that the Cowboys have to draft a tight end this offseason. That just throws me for a complete loop, because here's my thing. If the Cowboys draft a tight end, we already know they don't have a first-round pick. So you're not going to get the cream of the crop. You're not going to get the Hockenson. You're not going to get the Fant. You're most likely not going to get Irv Smith. And you might get a guy who might not have tested that well, might not have had that much production, might have had great production and not tested well, might have had decent production, tested well, and is still going to be a bump. There's all sorts of types of guys that you can get in the draft when it comes to the tight end. And obviously, any situation, any position, that's true. But more so for me, tight end, when I look over this class. My concern is this. If you're not going to go up and trade for a tight end, trade to go grab a tight end, which you would be ridiculous to in the first place, We don't believe in trading up, and definitely not for that position. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a guy that's going to be kind of similar to what Blake Jarwin and Dalton Schultz are. And I'm not saying that they can't have a higher ceiling than those guys, but my concern with that is, are they going to help you right now, 2019? Is that player that you draft that's not really a top-tier guy, is he really going to be able to change how your offense functions, or are you going to have to kind of babysit him and bring him along? Now, I know you do some draft work over there on your side. My man McCool does the Best Coast Boys pod. He does lots on Cowboys, so he's in tune with everything that you need to know about the Cowboys. What do you feel about this tight end class, and do you agree with me that it would be kind of a waste of a pick for the Cowboys to focus on getting the tight end in round 3 or round 4, whenever that may happen?
I totally agree. I think that, you know, especially now that they've brought Witten back into the fold, they clearly have a full room at the very least. And you have to believe that you know, Jarwin, who showed you quite a bit along the stretch, and I've been a Jarwin fan for a long time, and Schultz started to come on at the end of the season. Now, I thought Schultz would you know, friend of this show, I'm sure, Sean Rabble Rouser and I were at training camp last year, and we're sure that by midseason, Schultz would be the starter at the position. And this is while Swain was still moving around on the team and still upright. You know, I think that you got to give room for those guys to grow. I think there's already a controversy throughout the Dallas Cowboys camp of whether Witten's presence is going to eat into those Schultz and Jarwin snaps, which I'm taking them at their word that they're bringing Witten in, you know, kind of in a special situation, a player coach situation. He's going to take a reduced snap role to allow some of these younger guys. We'll see how well that holds up. But, you know, I agree that unless you're getting someone, and frankly, Katie, I mean, just looking at the landscape, how many tight ends in this draft are you going to, I mean, let's say you had your pick of the litter. How many of these tight ends are you going to be able to bring in that are going to be immediately better in 2019 anyway? It's like maybe 3, maybe 4. I mean, I think Irv Smith is probably the last guy or you know, like I think you look at all those guys, the top fan, the two Iowa guys, Hockenson and Irv Smith. I think outside of maybe those top 3, you know, tight end is an incredibly difficult position to transition into, especially your rookie year. And I think any guy outside of those top 3 who doesn't bring something elite or special, you know, immediately with their game, their rookie year, I think it's probably going to be either a progress stopper or a step back from maybe what you have immediately already on the field.
Before they brought back Witten, I was all in on bringing in Tyler Eifert. And a lot of people will say, you can't bring in Tyler Eifert. He plays like 3 games a season. I don't care. Because here's the thing. When Tyler Eifert is on the field, he is by far better than what Blake Jarwin and Dalton Schultz are going to bring you. Based on what I saw last season, there could be a lot of offseason progression. I will not, you know, put a cap on that whatsoever. But what I know about Tyler Eifert and what I've seen from him in the past, I know that he can step into the room and be a dynamic force in the passing game when he is on the field. And if he gets injured, you then know that you have Blake Jarwin and Dalton Schultz to fall back on. Yeah. Now, can that happen now that Witten's here? Possibly. I don't know if they're interested in bringing 4 to the table. They're probably definitely not bringing 4 to each regular season game on the active roster, although they did do it a couple times during the season. I don't think there's that much room in the end, especially with some of the other things that they need to do. Regardless, drafting a tight end now means that you have Witten, your drafted tight end, Jarwin, and Schultz. So you're automatically giving up on Schultz, who you spent a 4th-round pick last year. Because you're not going to give up on Jarwin. You already saw, I mean, he's produced for you in a game. I understand that Schultz might outpace him in the preseason, in training camp, and all those sorts of things. Regardless, you're going to be pushing one of them off to the side. Because if you spend a draft pick on a rookie, you're going to have to play him. Unless it's a 6th-round or 7th-round or whatever the case may be. They don't even have a 6th. They have a 5th and a 7th. But yeah, as long as it's not one of those later picks, you're going to have to play this guy, which means that you're signing off on one of those. Now, if in their evaluation they decided, hey, none of these guys are really good, only one of these guys is somebody that we really want to include in our future plans, and so be it. We're not privy to what the coaches talk about. But for my money, drafting the tight end is going to have a learning curve as well, is simply not what this Cowboys team needs.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think, and the other thing to consider is, you know, we talk about Schultz being the odd man out, but I think there's a high probability that we go into the next offseason or the next regular season, you know, going into training camp and discover pretty quickly right away that Schultz is the best blocker of the three, you know, because the issue with him was only ever about putting, you know, a season in the weight room. He has by far the best technique of any of the three tight ends right out there blocking. And I think especially now, you know, old man Witten, I think personally the one area where his game had digressed the steepest the last few years is, you know, executing the blocking.
Yes, yes.
Despite the fact that he was a big man, he wasn't able to do those split zone blocks across the formation to take off a defensive end anymore. He wasn't able to do that stuff with regularity. So I envision that the idea, I mean, look, if they do this anything other than this, it's not, it may not be great, but my role for Witten, I envision is a red zone, third down receiver, a guy who you know can get open eventually on an option route. But if they're using him more than, you know, 30 snaps a game and they're taking Jarwin and Schultz, who I again, expect steep improvement from this offseason, I think that they're making a mistake. And I think they're making an even further mistake. They're, you know, further multiplying that mistake if they're deciding to go out and draft a guy on top of that who's also not going to get on the field.
Absolutely can't draft a guy. I can still get down if they sign Tyler Eifert because I don't think that Witten does anything.
I agree.
I don't think Witten adds anything to the passing game, and I don't think that Jarwin is as good as his Week 17 performance against the Giants. I think that was kind of a flash in the pan, a situational thing where the Giants have been already given up on the season. Everybody was going balls to the wall. It was just an offensive shootout. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Kellen Moore, but I still doubt that's going to be the Cowboys' forte in the coming season, is just airing it out all over the place. But I don't think what Jarwin brings to the table is enough to say you don't go out and get a Tyler Eifert for the right price. Now, if he wants like $7 million sure a year, obviously he's not coming. But if you can get him, you know, on a two-year deal where it's backloaded more so than what you're paying in 2019, I'm definitely on board with bringing him in.
And he just gets a regular, you know, a decent medical staff for once in his life.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, that's just crazy how injured he has been in Cincinnati. It's, I mean, like, you kind of have to bet on the fact that, okay, nobody can be injured to that extent every year of his career. So maybe if he just gives us the 1 year, it'll actually come out to be something. But let's switch gears a little bit. And, of course, I'm rocking here with my man Lando McCool on the Catch This Fade podcast. You can find him on Twitter at McCoolBCB. Make sure you follow him right now. Let's talk about one of these narratives that's been going around this all season that you just can't get behind.
Well, you know, one of the things that happens usually is, you know, when you do daily podcasting or podcasts like this and you're in season, is that some of your buddies are a little bit ahead of you in the draft world, right? Because like they can check out, or if they do draft specific shows, they're looking at all the prospects. So by the time that you get done with the playoffs for following the Cowboys, it's time to hop into the groove of things. You start to, you know, catch up to everybody and get a feel for what this draft class is like and that sort of thing. And then the next phase that happens is the things that start happening to your team that set up the offseason start to fall. Like this guy gets cut because of salary cap reasons, or this guy gets suspended indefinitely because he's in a drug program. And so mine is very much having to do with the narrative of the gear shifting that went in from focus to defensive tackle, from defensive tackle, really just focus where it was normally, to shining a bright spotlight on defensive end because of the news of Randy Gregory. And, you know, my reasoning is not only because it feels like the situation with Randy is unique and that the tide may turn a little bit on this. It feels like there's been a lot of whispers along those lines that, well, let's kind of pump the brakes on this. There's an opportunity here. I won't even get into the large web of talk about the CBA in 2020, this being a potential pilot program for how to deal with marijuana offenders in the program, you know, mental health issues that Randy Gregory has dealt with throughout his career and how the league views that and how the league views medicating those situations and how the league views players that are trying to actively work towards helping themselves in the plus and minus of doing that while separating the player from his team. All of those things are very, you know, individually difficult to those. Each one of those could be a podcast in itself, right?
Right.
But to me, let's just talk about from the Cowboys front office perspective, right? They, you know, first of all, you got this idea that, okay, maybe Randy's not gone forever, so let's not completely maybe rule him out of the picture, but we do still need to build a roster, right? Now, I think the thing that people aren't accounting for here as much is that Tyron Crawford is a defensive end. Like, he's not a defensive tackle.
Right.
You can play him at defensive tackle. You can get him some snaps there if you want in a NASCAR package if you like. I think he's effective in limited snaps in either of the interior spots. But to me, what I feel like I learned last year and after watching the tape and after arguing with myself about this for years and years, I think Tyron Crawford is at his best playing that right defensive end position. Best case scenario in concert with somebody else, right? Like, okay. Like the best case scenario was him mixing it in with Randy Gregory, him sharing snaps there and then kind of just rotating up and down. But having said that, I think what you look at is you've got Tyron Crawford, you've got Armstrong, who I think Dorrance Armstrong is, you know, he didn't quite show out the way I feel like everyone expected it to based on his performance in the preseason. But I think that what he showed you is that this guy can play in this league and he has the athleticism to do that. I'm ready for him to take the next step. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does. And I think say what you will about Taco, he can give you snaps there. He can do things there. You know, is he where we want him to be? No, because if he was where we wanted him to be, we wouldn't even be having this conversation, right? Like, if Randy Gregory being gone is just, okay, that's a coincidental situation, we need Taco to get those snaps anyway. So I think at the very least, between Tyron Crawford, Dorrance Armstrong, and Taco Charlton, a good job can be done. Now, I'm not saying that the Cowboys don't need to add pass rush to this team. I think they do. I think Randy Gregory's absence puts not more focus on the need for defensive end. I think it puts more focus on the need for a pass rushing under tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Because what this defense needs is a second pass rusher, no matter what happens, you know, with DeMarcus Lawrence. You need someone opposite of DeMarcus to disrupt the passer, to, you know, separate out the focus on the offensive coordinator and the blocking schemes to destroy DeMarcus's chances of getting anywhere. And again, beyond that, this defense is built to have an under tackle that presence that's pass rush. In the modern NFL, where you know, short passing game is the emphasis of what everyone is trying to do, having an interior pass rush is the only way to counter that. So for me, as much as everyone thought positionally, you know, hey, oh, we lost a defensive end, we need a defensive end, I viewed it more as, no, we lost pass rush, we need pass rush. And I don't think that necessarily has to mean defensive end. If anything, I think, again, it puts more of an onus for us to need to go out there and find a guy who is a monster as a gap squeezer, somebody who can fit his hat between the gaps and disrupt on that other side of the center. A three technique who can really, you know, kick this defense up to another level.
I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the main arguments that I had with people, and I eventually, unfortunately, was proven right. You know, you had those arguments with people on Twitter where you know the evidence is on your side. You wish it wasn't. You wish that you could take the other side of the equation, but you just can't because you're staring at the evidence. People tried to call the Dallas Cowboys defense elite in the middle of the season and you know, in the second half of the season. And I just kept arguing with them. I'm like, are you guys crazy? Have you never really watched another NFL team other than the Dallas Cowboys? They're elite compared to what they've been under Rod Marinelli, but they are so freaking far from elite, you have no idea. They had nothing as far as pass rush coming up the middle. The thing that kept Dallas from being a great defense was the fact that David Irvin only played two games. That was it. If they had that pressure up the middle, which we know he can create, except he's off in another world dealing with his personal issues and no longer going to be a part of the team, But if they had what David Irving had given them the previous season, combined with everything else that came to fruition last year, then I would have said that they had a chance to be one of the great defenses of the league. Other than that, they were just really good. And there's nothing wrong with really good, but it's not elite. There was probably not even truly an elite defense last year, but the closest was Chicago. And they were so far in front of what Dallas was based on them having playmakers at every level. The Cowboys had a playmaker at left defensive end. They had playmakers at linebacker. And they had, for the first half of the season, for the first two-thirds of the season, a playmaker at cornerback. We're not even going to talk about what happened to Byron Jones down the stretch of the season, because that sure as hell wasn't what I saw in the beginning of the season. But we digress. That's for another podcast another day. People really aren't ready to hear that truth that I'm going to lay out to them. But I wholeheartedly agree with you that three technique is the key to what Dallas needs to do to get this pass rush off the ground. Now, my big thing about the narrative that now that Randy Gregory is suspended again, that the Cowboys now need to prioritize the right defensive end position is, why would the Cowboys have been planning on Randy Gregory as a foundational piece anyway? Because until they rewrite this new CBA in 2020 and possibly get rid of marijuana testing, which I think Gregory will end up being the poster child for, there's no possible way that any front office worth its salt would ever write him in Sharpie as being somebody that they're going to build around and say, we're good at defensive end because we have Randy Gregory. That would be foolish. So for me,
and they didn't, to their credit, like that's the thing is that they exactly, if you just look what the Cowboys did, they didn't do that, and that, I think that's the thing that people are missing here, is that they think that the Cowboys were left with their pants down here. But if you look at it, they don't need to panic at all.
Right. Whatever they were planning on doing at defensive end before is what they're planning on doing now. I don't think it makes any difference that Gregory got suspended. So
I think it's everyone reacting immediately to the news, which is fine. And again, they get this news way before we do. But beyond that, this was something that they had protected themselves from for, even with Taco being as disappointing as he is, they're still protected to an extent that they have bodies there that they think have upside that can improve. They probably still need to get a pass rusher at defensive end at some point, but they don't need to go out in the draft. And it's not suddenly, your must pick at 58.
Exactly. I think that's a major point, is that it doesn't become, just because Gregory got suspended, it doesn't mean that it's the must pick at 50. And I think you said that beautifully. Now, one of the things that I say beautifully, and I say it along with my 4-year-old son, for those of you who don't know, Landon and I have our youngest child is basically the same age, because mine turns 5 in August. Your daughter turns 5 when?
In August. August 30th.
There you go. Exactly.
I think they're weeks apart.
I'm August 8th. You're August 30th. So we've been doing this whole youngest child thing together for the last 5 years, and it brings some funny moments. Now, I don't know about your daughter. I've kept along with the fascination with Peppa Pig and all of those sorts of things. My boy knows that I cover the Cowboys. He doesn't really watch football with me, but he knows that I cover the Cowboys. So anytime he sees a star, I have the Car Magnet advertising the website on my truck. He sees it. He sees a star on, anything that I have hanging up. My towel that I have underneath my TV, it has a big star on it. And he automatically, every time he sees a star, go Cowboys. It is the most adorable thing in the history of the universe.
I got one of those too. It's every time she sees the star, she says Cowboys. Making sure that she knows that I remembered.
Exactly.
I remembered that. That's exactly. Cowboys. And she also thinks that the Cowboys play every football game.
Yeah.
So anytime I'm watching any football, it's always go Cowboys, and I'm like, it's the Super Bowl, unfortunately. And,
right.
It's just a reminder that they're not there.
I'm watching the AAF, and he's like, Daddy, where are the Cowboys? I say, they don't play in this league, baby, but it's the Cowboys. So I said, okay, well, they'll be on later. I just tell him they'll be on later, and then he goes and plays Super Mario World, and he's fine. He doesn't even remember that he was watching the Cowboys. But
how much Cowboys does he watch? Like, how much have you tried to, sit him down and actually watch a game with you?
I haven't tried. This is going to be the year. 2019 is going to be the year, because up until this point, I didn't think that he had the attention span to truly sit and watch. And I know some people have indoctrinated their kids prior, But I feel like as long as he knows who the Cowboys are, I've been okay. And he knows that I love them, so he's still doing that whole daddy worship thing, which eventually will probably end. I hate to say it. One of these days, he's probably going to feel that same way.
Yeah, probably.
But for now, daddy loves him, so he loves him, and that's all there is to it. But I think now I want to try to get him into watching football. The interesting thing is, you know, the only video games that let him play are stuff with fake violence. There's no real violence. There's Mario jumping on a Goomba, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
He can't watch me if I'm playing Tekken. He can't sit in the room. I have to pause the game as soon as he comes in. All of those sorts of things. I try to protect him from all of that sorts of stuff. So he really can't watch me play my PlayStation, which I've kind of picked back up on in the last year. But the one game that I've allowed him to watch me play, I have the old school classic, Miss Pac-Man and some stuff like that, and Tetris, and he plays those with me. But I got the Major League Baseball The Show.
Oh,
so
wow.
My kid is loving baseball. And he now says,
wow, that must be huge for you.
I am so psyched.
Oh, man.
I am so
You're
psyched.
Father of the year.
Listen. my son is short. His grandfather's, I'm just 5'10". But his grandfather on both sides of the family are short. He's never going to have any height to be possibly a sports player at any level, except for probably baseball or soccer. So the fact that he's into baseball is just making my heart swell with pride and joy, even if he's never going to actually be good at it. I don't care. As long as he's interested, I'm happy. So now it's go Cowboys, go Nationals, back to back. He says them both together, and I'm ecstatic.
I've been trying to stair step it. You know, we finally just kind of cleared the hurdle of taking her into a movie theater and her sitting through a movie, like, you know, without being a disrupt to others and to herself. You know, she went and saw, I think it was Mary Poppins with my mom when we were back in Dallas for something, maybe it was for Christmas. And so now that she's done that, my next step is to try to get her to watch football with me. I've tried to sat her down and a couple different times, and she sat there definitely longer than I expected before getting up and running away and doing something else. But you know, I'm determined to at least get, because here's the thing, like, you know, without getting into family history, my wife does not watch football, which is absolutely crazy. Her father was an all-time LSU great, and everyone in her family is huge football fans. They all watch it all the time. Everyone she knows is a football fan. She went to OU, you know, she went to OU when they were winning championships, and Adrian Peterson was in her graduating class. She hates football, doesn't even know. She couldn't even pick out the Sooners uniform out of a lineup. It's crazy. But she is totally, you know, accepting of that I am obviously football crazy. So it's really going to be an interesting 50-50 to see whether the football bug has caught on to my daughter or not, because obviously her mom is a huge football fan. My mom watches football. Like, it's everyone except for her mother watches football. So it'll be interesting experiment. I agree. I think 5 is the year that it's time to figure. The attention span is just right for them to at least attempt to sit down and see if they enjoy it or on any kind of level at all.
Exactly. And it's funny you mentioned the fact that you won't have the support of your, not support, but you won't have your wife in the room cheering along with you. My wife is a lie. Because when we were dating, before we got married, I thought that she had interest in football. It was a lie. She was doing it because she cared because I cared. And then once we got married, magically, she doesn't ever want to sit in the room with me while we're watching football anymore. I said, you bamboozled me. You got me.
I think I may have been more of the bamboozler in this one. It's because she was upfront about not being a huge football fan, and I may have been just kind of like, I will watch football, and I like the Cowboys, okay? And then smash cut to her mouth agape reaction to me jumping on the back of my couch because Terrence Newman dropped an interception or something. I definitely feel like I flipped it. I was the one who maybe downplayed my Cowboys fandom a little bit.
Hey man, look, you got to do what you got to do to be attracted to the person that you're crushing on, man. You got to do what you got to do. And for me, like our early dates were going to go watch, because again, we're in the DC area, so the Cowboys You know, this was before Sunday Ticket and all that kind of stuff. We would go out to the bar. We would go out to sports bars as dates on Sunday to watch the Cowboys. I had no idea that she wasn't really interested in watching the game with me, but, you know, it is what it is.
It's that KD charm is powerful stuff, man.
It must have wore off because she ain't tripping anymore. She ain't tripping anymore at all. But again, back to the kids, because that's really what I wanted to focus on here. And before we even get to the Catch This Phase segment of the podcast, man, I know recently that you've talked about, relocating, that you're still obviously staying on the West Coast, but you're relocating. And it brought us to an offline conversation where we were talking about the quality of schools, because with young kids, obviously, you're focused on making sure that they have the best opportunity to not only do what you do, but to hopefully surpass you one day in what you've accomplished. And that all starts with education. So we were chopping it up. And we were talking about how difficult it is to get a strong education for your child nowadays in these current times and the different approaches that we're taking. Now, myself personally, the school system where I live, and I've been here since I was a child, since fourth grade, I've been in this county, so this school system, it's completely eroded from the time that I was, going to school. Mm-hmm. The elementary school that I went to when I was in school back in the day was one of the best elementary schools in the entire state. It was renowned. The governor's child went to my elementary school, public school all the way.
Yeah.
This was a top flight elementary school. We were considering moving back into the specific neighborhood where I went to school growing up. That school is now ranked number 381 in the state.
Ugh.
7 years ago, it was ranked number 580. It dropped from being a top school to 580. That just and again, it's still probably a more feasible option than some of the other ones. I have my kid in private school right now. Everything I do about the Cowboys actually goes into paying for my child to go to school. But
that's just for a good cause, guys. Make sure that you follow. Subscribe, guys.
Yes, if I ever put up a GoFundMe page, trust me, that's what it's about. But I mean, like I said, hearing that you were getting a move brought me into that conversation about how bad public schools are. So if you don't mind, tell the people a little bit about what's got you relocating.
Well, I mean, it's every bit of that. I mean, I think that the school, public school situation, I grew up in a public school, and my situation is extremely unique, and I was extremely privileged, and I'm going to use that word specifically, to grow up in an area that I did that was a small school district. And so I, it was at a very good school district. And so, I think like you, I had a very positive public school situation. The idea, just looking around, and I live in California, and I think California has been renowned for years and years for having problems with their public school system. And I think you look around at where we live in a good area. I mean, a decent area right now. It's not, certainly not super rich, certainly not super poor. It's a nice cross section of people. All different types of people live around where I'm at. So it's not, one specific race or monetary, income level or anything like that. It's a pretty decent cross section for where I live. And the schools are, the public schools are meh, to say the least, and say the best. And most of the best school options are charter schools. And I mean, and this is, again, everything I'm going to say here is obviously my own opinion about all this stuff. So if anyone's offended, I apologize, and let's have a conversation about it. But my whole problem and my wife's whole thought process in this in general was our daughter's education. We've decided, I think at this point, we're probably just having the one, and education is our number one priority. But our secondary priority there is that we didn't want to contribute to a system that was going to hurt some other kids' chances of the education.
Okay.
And I feel like, and again, this is just my opinion, I feel like charter schools in California have robbed a lot of, especially, you know, underprivileged kids that don't have a lot of choice, or can't afford to get into a system like that, or sometimes, you know, because they're charter systems, they're not regulated as well, and you find that there's all kinds of weird stuff going on. I think there is value in not only in the state but countrywide, you know, and I think we're reaping the benefits of not having a good education system right now because we are a very undereducated populace.
Right.
I think we, in general, there needs to be a major investment initiative into looking into the public education. And it's not just because my kid's in here. This is something that has been needed for a long, long time. That, you know, part of what happens when we raid public services and you know, federal services is that a lot of times that trickles down to the school. And now what you have is the people that are in our society, these teachers that teach our youth, that are probably the most valuable people in our society, are being paid like they are, you know, some of the least valuable people in our right. society. And then on top of that, now they're also reaching in their own pockets to pay for supplies and And now it's in such bad shape. We hear about it here with schools out in California. Public schools are having to share nurses. Like, you know, they're having like three different public schools have to share a nurse so that they can have enough, you know, so they have any services at all for their school and things like that, you know, and just the dividing up of what little resources are going into public education to all these, you know, to vouchers or to whatever system, instead of just contributing to a larger working system, is really kind of further broken this, you know, the public education. So yeah, our choice became, you know, staying where we are, paying the you know, level of rent that we pay now, which we won't even get into what rent is like out here in California, especially near Los Angeles. But you know, paying that same amount of rent and then paying, you know, X amount more to put my kid into private school or hopefully to put him into private school, because there's obviously also just competition to get into private school,
right?
Or, you know, a charter school or something like that, or to take that money, apply it to rent or to lease or something, and move to a place that had a solid public education system, a solid school district. And luckily enough, we found a spot for us we're moving to South Pasadena, which has a you know, renowned school district. But I mean, you know, like it's, and I love the place that we're going to move. I'm excited, but it also feels like, you know, I didn't really have a choice. I mean, I'm very lucky that we can afford to do this, and you know, that we have the option to move and to get into a good school district. But you know, I can't even imagine what it's like, what it would be like if I didn't. I mean, to some of the schools that are around here, it's just sad that there isn't a better system around us. I mean, I think this is something that's been echoed by people for decades now, but it's just sad that we don't have better choices for us, or a good singular choice to put our kids into, because it really does you know, have terrible trickle down effects in our society that I don't know that people in general want to discuss.
Well, for us, it was different because we have a teenager. He's now in college. But we moved into our house. We purchased a house, so we don't have the flexibility. I mean, obviously, you can sell and buy and do, you know, all those sorts of things, but it's not as easy as when you're renting.
It's not as easy
to move, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but when we moved up into this area, we actually put him in a charter school because the high school in this area was absolutely trash. There's no way that we would send him to the high school that was for the area that we were moving into.
And what else could you do? Like, I mean, what else? What are the choices?
Well, the other option was private. So, you know, it would have been to foot that cost, or it would have been to put him in the charter school. Now, the charter school thing for our county is relatively new. It's really just in the last 6 to 7 years. Basically, the charter school that he went to was the first year of existence. So he was in the first graduating class. It started in seventh grade, went all the way up until 12th grade. He was in the first graduating class of his charter school. So that's how new the concept was when we put him in for this particular area. I know other parts of the country have had different schedules. But we didn't anticipate at the time when we were house hunting the need to look for the best school system. Completely didn't foresee the next two kids happening. It just wasn't even in our wheelhouse when we were house shopping. It was basically trying to find the best value for the house of something that was going to appreciate. That was really my main thing, is finding a house that would provide value. I wasn't worried about the school system. So now that that's happened, now that we're here and we have our kids, we're kind of handcuffed based on where we are in our options. We have tremendous private schools that have great ratings that are exorbitant prices. We have decent private schools that are somewhat more affordable. And then, like, what I have for right now for my child is a private Montessori. That's where my youngest is, my four-year-old. He's in a private Montessori. Now, Montessori is something that I came up in and I firmly believe is a great foundation for kids. Not everybody likes the alternative method of how that's done, but I think it adds to... I think it adds a lot to your child's development, and that's what I chose for my child. Now, the interesting thing is that my county has public Montessori, but it's lottery-based. So the first year that we were trying to get him into public Montessori and was lottery-based, we were number 13 on the wait list. And we were like, okay, cool. He's definitely going to get in. 13 on the wait list, that's nothing. That's, you know, a beggar's dozen. He's easily going to get in. Never got in. So we sent him to a private Montessori. Next school year, did the lottery again because he's still in pre-K, so it's another lottery. We were 137th on the wait list. So you know we didn't get in. So this is just speaking to the lack of options. There really aren't that many, even if you want to do Montessori. I would have to, there's basically only the Montessori he goes to now, one that's 30 miles away, 30 minutes away. And then another one, we have a bunch that are actually in the city in D.C. proper, but they have D.C. rates. And I don't know if you know much about the gentrification of D.C., but everything in D.C. is like L.A. prices now.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about private schools for five-year-olds that's like $2,500 a month. Mm-hmm. That ain't happening, Jack. So
it's nuts. It's crazy. And that's the thing is that like you know, kind of going back to what I was saying with the charter schools, like a charter school is a catch-all term, you know, like you could be getting anything, you know, it could be the best school you've ever gotten. It could be a fine school that just is a little bit different this way and that. The problem to me is that, like, you know, we're all trying to scramble to avoid having to put our kids in failing public schools, and that's the issue, you know, is that, like, I mean, we should be living in a world where your method of looking for a home is the reasonable way whether you're having a kid or not. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we should be able to find ways to get our kids good educations no matter where they're living, you know, right. Because that's the thing is that. And this is, you know, a much larger conversation. But if you want to optimize the output of this country in any way, we need all the brains we can get.
Exactly.
Like,
people
need to be educated across the board, up and down, across this country, because we need all the smart people that we can handle. And that's why, you know, the idea of, like, we're importing all this brain power from other countries. You know, we're trying to all these tech companies and these high advanced math companies, they're bringing in a lot of people from outside countries because our country's mathematics and science output isn't high enough. We're not outputting at the rate that we need. So, you know, I just feel like we're failing ourselves here. We're shooting ourselves in the foot by not reinvesting all this money back into education because, you know, that's the cure-all. That's the silver bullet for a lot of this thing, whether it's, you know, having, like I said, an undereducated populace, a populace that votes against its own interests, a group that doesn't understand, you know, civics on a very basic level, it seems. You know, like, I think these are all things that are direct results of –
Listen,
a broken education system.
We don't even have people that are being taught how to be financially literate, and that's personal budgeting. And for that reason, above anything else, people don't even know how to manage their own money, and that should be one of the foundational things that's coming out of a public education system. And it is for that reason, along with everything else that we've discussed here today, why the public education system of the United States of America has to catch this fade. It's not on the teachers. trust me, the problem isn't the teacher. The problem is the salary that you're paying the teachers and everything else that goes along with it. We're not blaming the teachers for being unable to reach our children. We're blaming the system in general and how it's being basically stripped of what it is supposed to be used for and made into something completely different and something completely privatized. So for that reason, the education system in this country has to catch this fade. We are at the end of our show, and it has been an outstanding Friday episode. I am so pleased with how this turned out. I cannot thank you enough, my man, 100 grand, Mr. Landon McCool, for joining us on this show today. Thank you so much for being here, sir.
Hey, anytime. It was always fantastic to hop on here with you. Please, please, let me come back, and we'll chop it up some more.
You already know. He is on Twitter, at McCoolBCB, and I am, of course, your host, KD Drummond. You can find me on Twitter, at KDDrummondNFL, and we will be back very shortly with your next episode of Catch This Fade. You know what it is. Salute!